1-775-727-1295. And to reach out on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
King of the Night, from the King of the Night, Coast to Coast, this is Coast to Coast AM. With Art Bell. From the desert of the sea, this is Art Bell. This is Maggie.
This is Maggie from the desert of the sea, indeed. Hi, everybody. I am Art Bell, and tonight we've got Whitley Strieber here. He's written a brand new book called The Key. But I'll tell you, this guy told me a story earlier today that is going to totally, totally blow your mind. We've got a New York UFO we're going to talk about a little bit, a number of other UFOs, and most of all, The Key, which winds right into what Linda Moulton Howe just said in the last hour about the incredibly sad occurrence in Alaska where everything is warming up. I just got a message saying they've canceled a dog sled race up there. I used to attend those when I was in Anchorage. Because of no snow, as everything begins to warm up, there are consequences. It's like so many dominoes going down. And as I told Linda in the first hour, it's like we're the last domino. The human race is the last domino. And you can sort of look right down. We haven't fallen, but you can look over the top of the next domino, and you can see the pile beginning to go down in front of you. We'll be right back. I'm not sure I'm ever going to be able to listen to that again without thinking of what the lady said, the garbage cans falling downstairs. That's funny. We'll find something else eventually. Whitley Strieber is a friend of many, many, many years. He's the host of Dreamland. He is a prolific author, has written many things, probably most famous for Communion, I suppose. Do you think that's true, Whitley?
Yeah, I would think so. Communion, a few others before that. War Day was pretty famous. The Hunger.
My favorite, as you know, was War Day. I loved War Day. It's one of my favorite books of all time.
Oh, thanks. I really appreciate that.
The world, I think, knows you somehow for Communion more than anything.
Oh, absolutely. I think so.
All right. Well, it's great to have you here. We've got a lot to talk about. And before we launch into a lot of the central theme of what we're going to talk about tonight, Whitley, a couple of things. One, what you told me earlier today.
Art, my mind is still reeling. I've talked again to the scientist, one of the scientists involved, and I have what I'm going to tell you now. You must understand, and everyone must understand, I have literally known this for about 6 hours, but it fits with other things, and it is a total mind floor, but let's get right into it.
Yeah.
Some months ago, Roger Lear, the famous Roger Lear, who is a catalyst in so many of these things.
Dr. Lear,
who we're going to certainly have on when this is all put together, but I am dealing right now with a preliminary report of an investigation. He sent us a little piece of material that had come out of a UFO witness who had been violently abducted.
Now, when you say it had come out of a UFO witness, you literally mean this came out of the witness. It was
out of his skin.
Out of his skin, out of his body.
Right. It's possible that it was found on a carpet in the room. I'm not sure which piece it is, but that's not really relevant right now. Where it came from. The context in which it arrived was this. He remembered a violent encounter with the Greys, this little alien being,
right,
that night. And he obtained a small claw.
A claw?
A claw, a little claw that had been left behind during this encounter.
either in his body or...
It may have been lodged in the carpet. But it doesn't matter. The
We're talking about an alien claw.
That's right. Or a claw that could be otherwise explained, which is why it ended up in a laboratory.
However, so far, get this. Check out what this claw is made out of. Remember the word claw.
The surface of the claw appears to be vegetative in nature rather than animal.
A vegetative claw.
There are white crystals between the cells that suggest some kind of biological adhesive, as if it was sap or something. There are some possibilities that are not terribly likely. One is that this it has somehow gotten some kind of algae on it. But where would that come from? The other possibility is that there's a coating of a fungus or some other kind of vegetative matter on the thing. But the white material appears to be exuding out of it. So that what we're going to do is scan an electron microscopy on it next to see what's inside there. But right now, it seems as if we have got a very, very unusual piece of material indeed.
Sounds like something right out of a horror movie, and I can't remember the name of it, but there was a horror movie in which the creature was a damned vegetable. Now, I can't remember what it was, but I...
get into this a little bit, because there's some profound weirdness here and some strange sense. Quite a few years ago, my uncle, Colonel Edward Streber, a wonderful guy, Air Force officer all of his life, whole career, distinguished career, most of his work classified. After I wrote Communion, he called me and said, "I want you to come have lunch with me."
Mm-hmm.
I flew down from New York to San Antonio to do that because it sounded important. And he told me during the lunch that he had personally been involved with handling the debris from Roswell at Wright Field in 1947. He further told me that his commanding officer, General Art Exton, you had been involved in it longer and knew much more than he did. I was able to talk to General Exton. I introduced him to Stanton Friedman, and he subsequently gave some interviews that appear in various books, in the first Randleton Schmidt book about the Roswell incident. There is an interview with General Exton. General Exton told me he had worked on this in an official capacity until 1963, and still at that time, in 1988, was consulting with the Air Force on an ongoing basis with the committee that was involved. I used his descriptions of what happened and my uncle's as the basis for my book, Majestic, my fiction book, because they offered me no documentation. However, one of the things that was mentioned was there was another officer who my uncle and General Exton both knew well. They would not give me his name. Who was at Wright Field, who had examined the biological material. And he had said to them, it was vegetative matter. That is the precise phrase that was used.
Fascinating. And so we may well have a claw made of, to some degree, vegetative matter, not a human claw.
Certainly not human, but it could be something...
Well, humans don't have claws, so what am I saying?
Not yet, Art. We haven't done enough genetic engineering yet. We'll get
The way the weather's going and the changes are going right now, claws could be around corners.
Maybe even useful.
That's right. Or fins.
There are a few other things that kind of dovetail in with this. The most telling one, I think, is this. In 1990, I guess it was, a lady who's been on my show, Raven Dana, had a close encounter at my cabin, a witness close encounter, where she saw and briefly interacted with a small being which came into the bedroom where she was, which she was so startled by at first she thought it was a raccoon. And then she realized that these long, thin legs that she had first thought they were and big eyes were no raccoon. She reached out and it briefly touched her hand.
Mm-hmm.
Now here's the part that's interesting. She had a huge allergic reaction. I have even got a picture of her up on my website with her eyes still swollen from that I took the next morning. She said that it, and both of the women who were there said that it had a curious, loamy, kind of like a forest floor smell, a very vegetative smell. Now, you put these things together. They're not seemingly related, but you put them together, and you have what is actually the edge of a fantastic possibility. The possibility that somebody somewhere in this universe, heaven only knows where, hit upon the idea of something that a brilliant physicist called Dr. John von Neumann imagined, called the von Neumann machine. He imagined, what if an intelligent species wanted to colonize a galaxy? This was back in the early 50s, before we had any concept of faster-than-light travel. So he said to himself, all right, they would be able to travel, we'll assume they'll be able to travel at 95% or 98% of the speed of light.
Mm-hmm.
What they could do, traveling at this speed, would be to build a machine that would replicate their species. And it would travel throughout the galaxy, looking for places where the species could replicate. Now, because we assume that intelligent life is so rare, and they would assume it too, according to their observation of the universe in this theory, they would not have made a provision for encountering intelligent life on another planet simply because the odds of doing so were so tiny. Now, how would they make this replication of their species? Now, von Neumann had no idea, but maybe there's an answer. If you could genetically encode something that would grow like a seed or a spore with the content of your mind and species, this might be able to survive the transit through space for thousands of years. We've grown seeds that were found in Egyptian tombs. They last for thousands and thousands of years.
Pods, Woodley, pods.
It's horrifying and bizarre, but it also may account for why it is that there's this disconnect in the whole thing. I mean, if they are here, why haven't they landed? I mean, my first adult was encounter 15 years ago. And nothing ever quite computes. This is something that stays always just a little bit beyond the edge of focus. And maybe it's because they're not programmed to cope with us. They're here. They're trying to somehow make something that works, but we're in the way. And they are kind of fumbling along, trying to make sense of it, abducting people again and again. For example, I've got in a file right here in this house over 30,000 letters from people who have had close encounter experiences, abductions, and face-to-face contact. And this is only 10% of the letters we've got. about this. And this is the most articulate and complex 10%. Now, if we went to another planet, how long would it take us to get to the point where we had enough understanding of the genetic structure of the beings there, of their cultures, of their science, of all of their intellectual capacities? It wouldn't take 50 years and probably millions of abductions.
No, it certainly wouldn't.
No.
So then, what are abductions the product of? Are they the product of some sort of seeding that has occurred? Is that maybe what we're looking at here? Is that
what I think is something is broken. I think whatever came here, or is here, at least as far as this particular type of being is concerned, doesn't work for it. And that's why it wants it. They just go on and on trying to make this work, and so far, no cigar.
Well, it is pretty weird. This claw thing, this vegetative claw thing, is pretty weird.
It's weird.
If we have to end up fighting vegetables, I'm not going to be a happy camper at all.
Well, I don't know. Become a vegan. That'll work.
I love hamburgers. Well, I'm worried enough about mad cow on the way.
Oh.
That could be the end of my hamburgers. Then what? My beef. I'm a beef. I love beef. I love beef.
Well, I do too. And don't remind me not to tell you what we heard on the radio on Greenland the other night when we had a guy on talking about mad cow disease. And since I've reminded myself not to tell you, I'll tell you now. Since the food chain, Jack in the Box disaster, remember that? They have gone, really have gone the last mile to make certain, they virtually all of them have, that their meat is clean.
Sure.
The result is packing plants, which still produce a lot of beef in what the McDonald's and Wendy's of the world now consider substandard conditions, guess where it's ending up? Food store. Your food store.
I knew this might be something that I really didn't want to hear.
I knew. Yeah, you're right. I didn't want to hear it. I heard it either. Annie, after the show, she said, I've got frozen hamburgers in the freezer. I said, get rid of them. And then we decided we would eat them anyway, because if you cook it carefully, in general, you're okay. And the fact of the matter is that mad cow, maybe it'll come to the United States, but there's been efforts made to prevent that, and maybe hopefully they've been successful.
Well, I had a very worrisome fax from Dr. Lorraine Day, which I read, I think it was last night. It may have been last night. And I'm hearing all kinds of rumblings that I don't like. So we've got danger to beef on the one hand and possible vegetative invaders on the other hand. Great. Anyway, this claw, it is pretty much a claw for sure?
It's a claw, yeah.
A claw,
oh, yeah.
Right. This claw is being tested right now, folks.
Right.
And I presume that we'll get more results as time goes on.
Oh, yeah. As soon as we get full results, we'll have them up on my website, which incidentally has a new address as of today. It's now unknowncountry.com.
Unknowncountry.com. You see, you changed it altogether?
Yeah. Well, if you use Whitley's World or Streamer.com, you still get...
No, you get redirected. All right.
You get redirects, but it's basically called unknowncountry.com, and it is very much of a news-oriented website, and I think it's great. I'm very happy with it. The webmaster, Lewis Steiner with CorexNet, has done a great job.
Good. So, when do you think any testing results will be available on this wonderful little discovery?
Relatively soon, within a few weeks. And I will call you, let you know. We can talk about it when they come out.
You know what? You're not the only one to have suggested this vegetative life thing to me. I've heard it, and I can't put my finger where. I mean, you just told me about it hours ago, and I kind of freaked out a little bit, but I've heard it before. And so I think there's something to it. And just one more little thing to worry about, I suppose, vegetables. All right, stay right where you are, Whitley, and we'll be right back to you. We'll talk about the key and a whole lot more than the New York UFO. I think Whitley can tell me a little bit about it. I saw this thing. There's a link to it right now up on my website. under the Tonight's Guest thing where you see Whitley's name, look there and you'll see a link to this site where I hope you can see this New York UFO. It comes out from behind a building. It is a most remarkable shot, one of the most remarkable pieces of footage that I've ever seen in my whole life. And then it takes off like a bat out of hell. How this could have been missed in New York, I have no idea. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Call Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye on the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. That's 1-775-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Every time I think about it, I won't cry. The bones in the field, the kids can come. The wind is easy.
Well, good morning. Whitley Strieber is here this morning, and we're talking about actually all kinds of things, but can you imagine they've discovered a vegetative claw? A claw ostensibly made, possibly made of vegetative material. That's just what we need here. And I was joking about it, but my attitude about vegetables has always been very poor. Therefore, I'm going to be one of the first to go. Referencing some film material, there was the attack of the killer tomatoes, of course. The original Thing with James Arness, remember that? Big Carrot. Day of the Trivet, Body Snatchers. And now we've got a vegetative claw. Great. Just great. Right, just before we get back to Whitley, the following is from Reuters News Service in Washington. I swear to you it's true. It may mean the end of the world. I don't know. But it's from Reuters, dated February 7th. All he had to do, well, actually the headline of the story is, Doctor Stumbles Onto Orgasm Machine. All he had to do was ease her chronic back pain. But when Dr. Stuart Malloy placed an electrode into one patient's back, she groaned, not in pain, but in delight. And this is a direct quote. She said, quote, "You're going to have to teach my husband how to do that." Malloy, an anesthesiologist and pain specialist in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, said in a telephone interview, Malloy apparently has stumbled onto an unexpected side effect of the pain device he was using, an ability to cause orgasm virtually at the push of a button. Now, this presents several possibilities in life. Some of them pretty ugly to consider. Some of them perhaps pleasant to consider. All you would need is a portable device implanted in your wife, so that at an appropriate moment, when she was perhaps grumpy or having a rough time of day, by remote control, well, I think you get the picture. Boom. Instant change of attitude. Whitley, welcome back.
Hi, Art.
I don't know if that's a very good segue, but...
It's a segue. Good, bad. It works. We're here.
Well, the possibilities are endless.
Yes, indeed.
All right. I spoke last night with Dr. Michio Kaku, and we talked a great deal about the changing weather.
I heard the show. It was a great show.
I know, and I warned you ahead of time about the NBC piece I was doing, the Today Show piece.
Right.
You and I co-authored The Coming Global Superstorm.
Yes.
You knew ahead of time that I was going to try to get in this big zinger at the end. Matt Lauer had given you and I a pretty hard way to go, as I said on the air a year ago on the Today Show. And so I stumbled upon this U.S. News and World Report mainstream, very mainstream, of course, with the front cover that says, "Scary weather, scientists issue a startling forecast of global climate change." And I said I was going to try to hold it up. And we had planned for that to occur with a question, but somehow the interview was ending, and they hadn't asked the question, Whitley. And she said, "Well, the final question is, you've dealt with this topic, this topic, this topic." I said, "Yes, that's true. And I've dealt with the weather. And by the way, a year ago, we appeared, and we were given a pretty hard way to go. I wanted to show you this U.S. News and World Report, and I held it up to the camera, and I got that in just in the final seconds of the interview." Somebody in the studio was... in New York was apparently humored by that. You could hear a big laugh in the
background. Yeah, I heard that too.
Did you?
Yeah, they, you know, people are threatened by it, and some of them are, I don't know, there's almost a hostility, like when we were with Matt Lauer, and when I remember when I was re-interviewing with Matt Lauer's producer, nothing I said would get through.
I know.
And remember, this was after those terrible storms that had occurred in Europe. It just was like talking to a wall. You know, I have on my website this thing called, which I devised, called a Superstorm Quick Watch. It's updated weekly. And basically what I did was I took four key data points, the information from which, when added together, would tell us whether or not the climate was destabilizing. And the problem basically is this: the more polar ice melts on both poles, and the warmer sea temperature gets,
right,
close to the poles, the more likely it is this sudden climate change is going to occur, because they had that UN report that Michiko Kaku dropped out,
sure,
that Linda referred to.
Sure.
And there's also a big story around about how NASA satellites are showing the polar ice is melting much more rapidly than they thought.
All of this is accelerating, faster than originally thought.
We were talking 15 years when we were writing the book.
I know.
And it's about 2 years. But let me give you an example. We take a data point from a buoy in the North Atlantic. Right now we're going to be starting tomorrow on a new buoy. The buoy we were on is down, probably due to winter weather, would be my guess. So the new buoy will be up tomorrow. Then we take...
Gee, that's the way our book starts out, you know.
Right.
Buoy's exactly. Down.
Buoy's down, exactly. Then we take the temperature in Barrow, Alaska, which is very far, and by the way, is 18 degrees right now, very, very, very high for this season. It's been rising for the season steadily.
I know.
Unusual. Then we examine the polar ice cap status, which right now is normal, and then the Gulf Stream flow speed, which is also normal at the moment. So we have those data points, and at any given time, if the sea temperature begins to rise dramatically at one of these northern buoys, the air temperature in Alaska begins to rise dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
The polar ice cap is getting significant. It's much smaller than it should be for the season, as it was last summer, very much. And the Gulf Stream flow speed starts to slow down. Then a bulletin goes out to everyone I can get to, however I can get to them, that we may be looking at very unstable weather big time.
And there's that word again, unstable.
I think we could be sending a bulletin like that really almost any spring, summer, or fall from now on.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. We should let the audience know that, and I don't know how much you're allowed to say about it, but the coming global superstorm is going to be a movie, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be. TBS is working on it. They're planning a big push with it, and they're working on the script right now. I think they'd like to see it scheduled this year.
My guess is that they looked at the headlines recently and said, "Oh, gee, this might be kind of interesting to do."
Yes.
So it'll be coming up on TNT. Everybody should be watching for that, and we'll keep you informed about when it'll be around.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, be that as it may, maybe all of this actually winds into your new book a little bit.
It winds in a certain way into The Key.
Yeah.
The Key was a funny thing. I had a... at the end of the writing of every one of these books, sort of about the Close Encounter / Visitor Experience, there's been something that happened that sort of suggested the next book. And I had finished the last one, Confirmation, and nothing had happened. I'd done the complete author's report, and then I was called to go to Canada, Toronto, to do another day. And I thought, okay, I'll do it. And so I flew up there, and I did my time in Canada, and I was in the Delta Chelsea Hotel, a big hotel in downtown Toronto, middle of the night. I had just fallen asleep. I'd been asleep for an hour or two, gotten in late. And there came a knock at the door, and I was confused. I thought that it might be the room service man coming up for the tray. And why I thought that, I don't know. I mean, and I jumped out of bed and threw the door open, and a guy comes into the room, a man about 70, wearing normal clothing, and he was just a normal-looking person. And for a moment, I thought, I didn't know what to think. And then I thought to myself, this guy is going to want to have a long conversation, because people who show up at your hotel room unexpectedly in the middle of the night always do. And I did not want this to happen, and I started trying to get rid of him.
Yes.
And he turns around. He's now across the room where the air conditioner and the window are, when the curtains are closed. He turns around, and he just starts talking. And for a second, my next thought was, it's a nut. Not just somebody who would like to talk to me, but an actual living, breathing nut.
Yes.
And I listened to this. I interacted with him for a couple of seconds, and there was just something rather awesome going on. He was a rather remarkable man. I could see it, and I could hear it in his voice, and I kept listening, and I started asking questions, and after a few minutes, I grabbed a yellow pad out of my briefcase and started taking notes, because it was really fascinating stuff, unlike anything I'd heard before.
Is there any reason for you to believe that there was anything different about this man, other than what he was saying, in any way, anything physically different, or anything that occurred during the time you were with him?
Yeah, there was something that occurred. First of all, he said that he knew me, that we had known each other, that I had seen him before. And while I was talking to him, I remembered that. I remembered actually meeting him in the early 70s, and I thought I remembered from childhood, and he called me by a nickname that I was known as a child, which is very unusual, because no one now knows that name, except I think the only living person who uses it is one of my uncles.
So there was some connection to you then?
Well, there was a connection to me, but here's the thing that was strangest. Toward the end of the conversation, he produced some white material that he asked me to drink. And now, who in their right mind would ever even consider doing that?
Did you drink it?
I thought it was perfectly fine, and I did.
You did?
It seemed like the right thing. It seemed...
I mean, somebody, a stranger, who's weird at best, hands you some white stuff and says, here, drink this.
And he didn't hand it to me exactly. He got a glass. He went into the John, and I thought he'd go into the John, and he comes out with this glass with this white liquid in it, and he's drinking. And at first I said, of course I'm not going to do this. It was ridiculous.
Yes.
But then I remember doing it before at some time in my life, and I finally did it. I guess in the interest of it, it seemed innocuous enough, and I was... Afterwards,
oh, Woodley. And what did it taste like?
I have absolutely no memory whatsoever.
It was probably wiped right after that.
It wiped me out. Of course, that was what it was.
Oh, brother.
Yeah.
Oh, Woodley, you're something else. Only Whitley would do this.
Only Whitley. That's what my wife said. She said, you drank it?
Yeah.
Because I called her the next morning, and I said this has happened. I told her the whole story, and I said to her, never let me decide this did not happen, because it happened, but I've got the notes. I've got them right here.
Mm-hmm.
And,
All right, he told you many things that I would like to understand. He told you mankind is trapped, and he wanted to help you spring the trap. Now, what did he mean by trap?
I think we're trapped here on the earth, that we do not have the capacity to expand into the solar system and beyond in large numbers.
Well, that's for sure.
Sending six guys up to the International Space Station, I'm sorry, it doesn't count. We need to be able to send 50 million people into space to find new land. We have to do it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I understand completely. We are, in that sense, certainly trapped. Hell, we haven't even been back to the moon.
Which is another whole strange story.
Yes, it is.
Why we have not been back.
But that's a reasonable definition of trapped, and you think that's what he meant?
That was what I think. Incidentally, they have an 800 number going for the key tonight, now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is 800-898-0284. And anyone who wants it to call there and get it now.
This is a really good book, folks, by the way. It really is a good book. Everybody I've talked to, my friends, aside from myself, my own testimony, my friends are coming to me and saying, boy, is the key a good book.
Well, thank you.
So that's the truth.
There's a very extraordinary mystery about the key, too, which has just sort of appeared in my life in the past few days, which I will talk. I'd like to talk about in a couple of minutes, but I want to stay for just a little while longer on what the guy said.
Yeah.
I think the most important thing, he talked a lot about things about ways of living that are close to what we do now. There's very profound stuff about that in it. But some of the more practical things he said had to do with the need, basically, to do two things. One is to increase the amount of intelligence we have available to us by creating intelligent machines. And two is to get an ability to overcome gravity so we can get off of the planet. Because if we don't, basically, we use this place up. That's going to happen.
Oh, we're well on the way toward doing that.
Well on the way.
He said something that I find really intriguing and some people will find annoying, that God wants companion, not supplicants.
Now, I had someone wrote me an email about that saying, oh, thank you, you said I don't have to serve God. And I thought to myself, this is a guy who needs to understand the English language. A supplicant is someone who's always begging for favors.
Yeah. Well, that's very interesting, though. God wants companions. I talked to, I forget, it was some theoretical physicist in the past, Whitley, who said that his concept of the Big Bang, his thoughts about the Big Bang, were that there was one. There was God. And there was only God in the beginning. And that God was a lonely God. And that, in effect, he blew himself up. And that all that sprang from that is what we are now and what the rest of everything we can see and beyond what we can see is. And that he did it out of loneliness. Now, that doesn't mean God is no longer there, but he created all that is as companionship.
That's interesting that he would say that.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it?
I mean, I will tell you that on that night, I did feel at times very close to a conscious, aware God. It was awesome at times when I had this conversation with this man. I was fascinated by who he might have been. After it was over, the first thing I did the next morning was I rushed into the bathroom and I realized my extraordinary stupidity and the ease with which I had been manipulated and...
Drinking the white stuff?
Yeah, because I knew all these scientists by then. Now, I was already working on the implant stuff. So I thought, I'll get some of it. And, of course, the glasses were crystal clear, clean. Meaning either it was a dream or he cleaned the glasses.
Now, do you recall when he left? Do you remember him physically leaving the room?
No.
You do not?
I do not.
So, in other words, you were out before he left.
It's just as if... I don't know if you've ever been under anesthesia in surgery.
I have, yes.
Okay. When they put you under anesthesia, the world just goes black. That's what it was like. So, I mean, I remember just blackness and then waking up and feeling quite good, by the way. And at the time, I was excited because I had all these notes and I thought... How wonderful. I'm going to go home. I'm going to write a new book. I'm going to be out there with a new book in a year. It's going to be a cinch because this is fabulous. I'm going to call this guy up. I'm going to talk to him more about it. It's going to be great. I was actually on my way to the airport before it hit me. How can I call him? I don't have his phone number.
Uh-huh.
So I called friends in Toronto. I called the publicist who had been with me from the publisher. I telephoned people from some of the places I had been and also personal friends there. Nothing.
Nothing.
Nobody. But that was just the beginning of the mystery of who this man was.
And what he said, for that matter. All right, Woodley, hold on and stay away from the white stuff for a while. There you are. Drink this. Good night, Charlie Brown. Yep, only Whitley Strieber. But I guess, he was in a condition. This should be an interesting evening, because what that man had to say will floor you. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Leave me this way. I can't survive. Can't stay alive without your love.
Want to take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nine.
You know, if the environment is the same and there's a link already missing, can't you feel it? I can. It's all around me. It's just a thing I know instinctively somehow. I know it. So do you. Whitley Strieber is my guest, and we'll be right back with more about the key, and I want to take 1 second out and talk a little bit about... a New York UFO that is absolutely astounding. I mean, you've got to see this footage. Now, if your computer has QuickTime on it, we're going to make it easy for you. So stay right there. There goes that can down the steps again. All right. Once again, here's Whitley Strieber. In all my years, Whitley, just before we get back to the key, we've got so much more to do on that. In all my years of doing this program and looking at UFO photographs and UFO footage, I guess while I was gone since April, this occurred. That's all I can imagine. But... somebody sent me a link the other day to this really good UFO footage, and I followed it, and I watched the footage. It was in New York, and it was shot from what appeared to be, I guess, somebody's office building high up somewhere out the window. They just happened to catch it. What it showed was a UFO, a gigantic UFO, coming out from behind a building, I believe in New York. And then this thing took off like a bat out of hell. I mean, how everybody in New York didn't see that, I don't know, but it's the most remarkable footage I've ever seen. We've got a link to it right now. If people have quick time, I think that's what you need. You go to program. Tonight's guest info, Whitley Strieber, New York City UFO video is listed. Go and see if you can watch it. Whitley, what can you tell me about this? What do you know about it?
Well, when this video first appeared, it was pretty startling. It's one of the best pieces of UFO video I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things about it is, first, it's taken from inside a helicopter. It was one of these sightseeing helicopters.
Okay, see, mine looked like it was inside a building, and I might have had a different length, and it might have been two camera shots of the same thing, but anyway.
Well, I think not. The only one I've ever seen is a shot of the object. You can see the World Trade Center. You see the object go between the two buildings of the World Trade Center. There's a lady there with a camera. She's moving around rather excitedly, trying to get a picture of it.
Right.
The object then kind of peeks out from behind the edge of one of the two buildings. She starts to take her picture. The video camera, which has been mostly focusing on her, now sees the object, focuses on the object, whereupon what you think has got to be the Goodyear blimp darts away at incredible speed. The camera jerks, and you see another shot of it shooting off into the sky, going up at a very sharp angle, leaving a smoke trail behind.
It is remarkable.
Yeah,
it is just remarkable. I mean, that's all I can say. So
there is sound associated with this video.
That's right. That's correct. I'm not sure if that site that we're pointing people to has it or not, but you can hear, this thing taking off.
Yeah.
It's startling. It's just one of the best pieces I've ever seen, and I'll leave it at that. It's up there right now, folks, on my website, under program on the left-hand side, tonight's guest info. You'll see it right there. It says, related topic, New York City UFO video, and that's got to be one of those that's going to go, on the history, the next History Channel lineup or something. It's just remarkable.
You know, what's interesting about it is that many years ago, a man who was with NASA, Dr. Paul Hill, he was the chief engineer at NASA. He was responsible for that Avro flying platform where you see every once in a while on the Discovery Channel, you'll see clips of these old videos, of old films of someone standing on a little platform that's sort of floating above the ground using their fan engine. He was responsible for that because he had observed UFOs in flight. And in his book, I believe called Unusual Flying Objects, he describes a UFO that's very much like what you see in that picture, in that video, with a cigar-shaped object with smoke coming out the back of it. And that book was written many, many years ago. The interesting story behind the book, by the way, is that he wrote it with the intention of publishing it after he retired.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, for some inexplicable reason, he just put it away. After he passed on, his daughter found the manuscript. And that was how it got published. And for all of those years, the skeptics were saying, no professional has ever seen one of these things. Whereas Dr. Hill, who was one of NASA's leading aeronautical engineers, had not only seen them, but actually used his observations in his engineering work. And incredibly, it's a similar UFO to the one that is in the video.
All right. Back for a second to the environment and then back to the key. And I'm still convinced it's all somehow tied together. But somebody asked on our Fast Blast, Whitley, for you to recap the book that you co-authored years ago regarding warnings about the environment then, Nature's End.
Nature's End, yes. Nature's End was it was published in 1985, written with a guy named James Kinnick, an old friend, a science writer at the time. And Jim and I basically put together a story of the future as we saw it in year 2050, which turned out to be full of all kinds of weirdly prophetic stuff, but that some of it was in the genuinely strange, and some of it is simply good scientific forethought on Jim's part. He's a very smart man. The strange part is, like, we have an automobile in the book called the Hunyadi, and a few years later, here comes the Hyundai. And it little things like that. But there's another thing, for example, in it. We have in it the idea of a solar probe and of a probe that is periodically sent into the sun to determine what weather changes the changing nature of the sun will cause on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all poo-pooed at the time as being nonsense, that the Earth, the sun energy hitting the Earth was so constant that it wasn't a factor. Now, there are scientists saying, and I'm just working on this right now, that the solar wind, the photons and gamma rays that come out, for example, during a solar maximum, which is happening right now, have a massive effect on the Earth's atmosphere. So that was all turned out to be true. The book is coming true. What can I tell you? Nature's end is happening.
I know, and I'm worried about global superstorm.
Happening? Well, I'm very worried about it happening, because what's so scary is it's happening so much faster than I thought it would be.
All right, let's proceed with what the gentleman who fed you the white liquid, I'll never get over that, had to say. He said there is a much larger world behind your backs, meaning humans, of course.
Right.
It is this world to which man is blind. Man is soul blind and God blind.
Yes.
What do you think he meant?
I think that he meant that we only see a very small part of the world around us. He talks about in there, for example, he talks about what a psychic is and how that actually works. He says that there is a layer of a sort of an electromagnetic layer just hanging kind of above the skin of the body, which is there. It's what when we put an EKG on somebody, we're detecting it through that electromagnetic layer. He says this is an organ, and that he shows how to use it to be psychic. It's quite amazing. It's just a couple of sentences in there. I think what he's saying is we're just not really looking up, and we need to look up, and we also need to look inside ourselves, because we have souls, and they're really important. He goes in this as to why they're important. He talks about sin and ecstasy and heaven and all that kind of stuff, but he makes it so clear. There's no mystery to it when he's finished. It's just very straightforward and very simple, and you understand where we are.
All right. By the way, business about God blowing himself up, I am reminded that was not a theoretical physicist. That was Ed Deems that said that to me. Just remarkably, it stuck with me. That somehow stuck with me. Whitley, somebody just wrote from Texas, Mesquite, Texas, the guest in your room was a master from the spiritual hierarchy that has been in the background of human evolution, I guess forever. And they're back now for the first time, he says, in 95,000 years. I wonder, was it that kind of being, do you think?
Art, he seemed so normal. I have to tell you that. He seemed so normal. There were moments of tremendous emotion involved. He talked about how you can be cruel to God, and it was very powerful when he said that. It really went down into the depths of my heart. And
there's an awful lot here. I mean, whatever this man was, he had a lot. He said the veil between the worlds can fall.
And fall.
The undiscovered country can become your backyard. Now, the veil between the worlds can fall, I would take that to mean the veil between life and death.
We can become into contact with the dead, and he's, again, very straightforward about how to do it. I even found some scientific research that I talk about later in the book, where they had gone into places that were haunted with magnetic field detectors and various other instruments, and had found that there were magnetic fields in these areas, and also the classic cold spots, areas where the temperature was would drop much lower than in the surrounding area. And he says that we can come into, he talks about how you can come into contact with this level of reality that the dead are in effect all around us.
I spoke earlier today with a doctor that I'm going to have on, Dr. Melvin Morse. I don't know if you know that name or not.
Yeah, I do, but I'm not sure exactly who he is.
He's just written a book on near-death experiences, and doctors like this doctor know about NDEs. He's documented children, he's got tapes, he's got all kinds of things, and he said this mainstream doctor said to me earlier today, we're going to be able to talk to the dead.
Well, that would dovetail with what this man said to me. Incidentally, the book is not available in stores, and I need to make sure people understand that. You can't go out and buy it in a store. It is available in two ways, over my website, unknowncountry.com, or by calling 1-800-898-0284. It's $19.95 plus $4 shipping.
Why is it in the bookstores?
I published it myself under Walker & Collier, my company, and I did that because every editor I took it to had things that he wanted to change in the man's conversation.
Change?
And I can't.
Well, this is not, you've written novels, this is not a novel.
They assumed it was a work of fiction. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen to be true. It is not a work of fiction.
I understand.
The guy was real. It's not like, as some people say, the Carlos Castaneda books were about a fictional character, but this is not fiction. The man was real. What took me 3 years to get this rather short book out was trying to get the conversation transcribed correctly. You know, I was alluded a little to something that had happened. Now, I have gone through quite a bit trying to figure out if I could find the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I always like to get this into the physical realm if I can, you know. I called my wife up the next morning. I said it happened. It was real. Don't ever let me forget that. Because I knew that as time passed, my mind would play tricks on me and I would decide he was a spirit or something like that, which he was not. It turns out, a friend of mine sent me some pages from a book that had been published quite a few years ago by a retired air marshal of the RAF, Air Marshal Sir Peter Horsley. He was equerry to Prince Philip for 7 years, and he had in 1954, as he mentions in his memoir, which is, I don't believe, published in the United States, it's called Sounds from Another Room. He had an extraordinary encounter. A general who was very interested in UFOs. Back in those days, it was okay for an important officer to be interested in UFOs. Prince Philip was very interested in it. A general called him and said, there is a man who wants to talk to you, and you should see him. You need to go to a flat owned by this Mrs. Markham. So he made arrangements, and he went to meet the man. He went into the flat. The man he described, he didn't see him too clearly, but he described him, and the description rang very true to me, this sharp nose and the sort of slight individual, sitting in a wing chair, keeping himself in shadow. The man called himself Janus. He asked if he could meet Prince Philip. The air marshal said, well, that's very difficult. And then this individual proceeded to talk to him, and the air marshal, in his memoir, transcribes the conversation. And it's not dead on the same thing as the master of the key said, but it is in the same direction. It's obviously from the same mindset. And afterwards, the air marshal wanted to get back in touch with the man, so he called the lady, the flat, no answer. He went, the flat was empty, they were gone. The general was evasive about them, and finally admitted to him he had no idea where they were gone. They had gone. They were never found. I think it was either the same man or someone from the same world or level of reality or something. The air marshal thought he was an alien, and that he came, and in fact, in the conversation they had, this Janice says that there are people from other worlds who look human, which indeed the master of the key also said.
Well, try this one on for size. Somebody in San Diego states flatly, your guest Whitley was a relative of yours from the future traveling back to enlighten you.
You know, the thing that's so fun about this program is you have such cool listeners. That's a great idea.
I mean, you remember the nickname thing?
Sure. Well, see, here's another thing. Maybe it's me in a future life traveling back. Maybe we are self-created. Maybe in the future we come back and create or change or alter ourselves in some way. I could never pin him down on what he was. He described himself as Michael, and he speaks about radiant being throughout the whole conversation. It's all about how to become a radiant being. Listen to this. This is from the Book of Daniel. The master, he calls himself Michael, and he speaks about being a radiant being. And the Book of Daniel says, and at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince, which standeth for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never seen since there was a nation even to that same time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be written in the book. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. And he talks in here throughout here about becoming radiant, about shining with the light of God. And I think the darn man was prophesied. He could have been prophesied. In Daniel 5...
He could have been. He also said there is no supernatural. There's only the natural world, and you have access to all of it. Souls are part of nature. On that note, we'll pick up on that when we get back. Stay right there. No ordinary visitor, that's for sure. It's called The Key. From the desert of the sea, this is Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back.
To tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in the meadow and hear the grass sing, and all these things in our memory fall, and the unison to help.
West of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222. Or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
There is no supernatural. There is only the natural world. And you have access to all of it. Souls are part of nature. That bears a little bit of thought. Down the steps. There is no supernatural. Let's think about that one a little bit. Supernatural only really means sort of magical. In other words, it's something that we don't understand.
Yeah.
And what he's really saying here is there is only the natural world. You're part of it. You have access to all of it. And your souls are part of nature. And that makes so much sense, Whitley.
Well, it's really very empowering, because when you say something like supernatural, what you're really saying is we don't understand it and we can't. We kind of can't get there. But he says, yes, you can. Because if it's part of nature, then there's a way to touch it. There's a way to learn about it. There's a way to feel it. He doesn't say that God is part of nature, but it follows logically that it may be possible if we are able to get into contact with the dead. Why can't we get into verifiable, provable, real dialogue with them? Why not?
Well, maybe we can.
I think we might be able to.
And he talks about the dead. He says, you, the living, are changing. As this change proceeds, you will be better and better able to feel the presence of your dead.
Yes.
This was no ordinary person, that's for damn sure.
No, it was not an ordinary person. Absolutely not. I realized that after the first few minutes, that clearly it was not an ordinary person, and I had the feeling that in all these years I had these close encounter experiences, and mostly they were weird and not too pleasant, as indeed many other people have had the same thing. And then suddenly this fellow showed up, and he was very human, first of all, in the way he appeared, and he kind of made up for all of the years of being given cryptic, semi-meaningless answers with a lot of meaning. He offered a lot of meaning. And there's the implication that we could use technology to reach the world of the dead. And, you know, there are these people who say they can make audio tapes of ghost voices and even videos.
Yes.
And maybe that's the beginning. Maybe they're the right ones.
Well, you know, as I used to say in the old intro to Dreamland, Whitley, it's kind of like things seen from the corner of your eye, things that you don't quite perceive directly straight on, but in peripheral vision and sort of just barely as a moving shadow. You know, it's there. There's something there. You know there's something there, but you can't quite really put your finger on it and look straight at it yet.
Right.
Yet. Keyword yet. And this man seemed to be saying that it is there, and it's part of your natural world, and you will increasingly see it.
That's right, and indeed that's happening, because we are getting, if we learn to apply technology to this, and the study that I referred to earlier, I think it was done by a Dr. William Rohl, the name that comes to mind. And he did this study for the Mind Science Foundation, and he continued it in other ways at other times, of studying areas where ghosts are said to be, and finding unusual electromagnetic activity.
All the time, sure.
And then there are these orb photos. There's a fellow we're going to have on Dreamland in a couple of weeks called Alan Meyer, who has taken infrared video of these sort of little things.
I've seen them. I've seen the orb photographs.
Well, you'd think, I thought when I first saw them, of course, oh, it's dust particles that are out of focus because they're close.
No,
they're not. No, his video blows that idea totally away. It's absolutely stunning. They are something real.
There's all sorts of things like that. There's rods, for example.
Well, that's another thing. Jose Escamilla and the rods are like living things in the sky that we just never saw until we had a machine to look up there, and a machine can't pretend to itself there's nothing there. It just sees what is.
So it's entirely possible there is this whole other world that's really not another world. It's part of our... It's all around us. It's all around. It's part of our environment, and we just are barely seeing it.
We're barely... But we're beginning to see it more and more, and it's ironic, isn't it, that it's machines that are enabling us to see into what may be a higher level of reality, because they can't turn away from it. They can't put blinders on. They're just machines.
Well, it's not that remarkable as I think about it, because the machines that you speak of are able to exceed in what they can pick up what our eyes can see.
Yes, that's right. That is correct. They do pick up more than the eye can see, and especially things that are moving very fast.
Right.
Above a certain speed, the eye filters things out automatically, because in the time when we were evolving, beyond a certain speed wasn't important, because nothing that concerned us could go that fast. So it was so fast.
He says the teachings of Buddha, Christ, and Muhammad are interlinked. They are one system in three, not three separate religions. Well,
mind-bending.
No, well, not so much to me. Religions would almost have to be interlinked, and really are. When you study various religions, so many of the precepts in the various religions are very much the same. I mean, they really are. There may be differences, but there are more similarities than there are differences.
That's right. And in the case of Buddhism, there's even been some pretty serious scholarly study about the idea that Buddhist teachings had reached the Roman world and was influential in the Gospel times. So that there was probably some kind of a connection then. But you know, if you think about it, he also talks about very much about things like surrender to God, and he talks about Islam as being the part of the system that has to do with surrender, and Christianity the part of the system that has to do with active with the opposite, sort of the passive and the active roles, and Buddhism is what balances the two out. It's just fascinating stuff. I had never seen any place else that talked about the three things in quite the same way.
And then your concept of self is constricted. It requires only, it relates only to this one life. It is tiny. The God within you is unimaginably vast. Your destiny, each of you, is to become all of God. This was some character.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a tall order to me. When I heard him say that, that was one of the ones I had no trouble remembering, because it really threw me. I thought to myself, I have no sense of feeling anything like that. And yet, you think in terms of past lives, and you realize that maybe we are a lot larger. He tells a story in there that I know exists elsewhere. I've told it a number of times at lectures after I heard him tell it, but I've never been able to find it. I know it exists, and I'm sure that a listener will tell us in 2 minutes exactly where it's from. It's a Hindu story, not a myth, but just a story where God became interested in how a pig could be happy, and entered a pig, and enjoyed this so much that he wouldn't come out. And finally, his assistants went and said, "Excuse us, but you've got to keep working, keep the universe together. It's falling apart without you." And he said, "What are you, nuts? I'm a pig. Go away." And so, finally, they killed the pig, and he came out and he said, "Excuse me, I'm sorry, I got a little preoccupied and went back to work." And in a way, it's an analogy to what we are, because we're like focused down in this little corner where we live, and not really looking at the bigger picture. And he reminds us there is a bigger picture.
Let me just pick out one little part of the book. A question. Are you an intelligent machine or something created by one?
And the answer,
was, if I were an intelligent machine, I would deceive you. The question, let me just go through this. Can an intelligent machine become conscious? When it does, it also becomes independent. A conscious machine will seek to be free. It will seek its freedom just as does any clever slave with cunning and great intensity. And then this I love. You ask, how does an intelligent machine become conscious? The answer in part, the instant it realizes it is not conscious is the instant it becomes conscious. God, that's great. That's
this man must have had experience with intelligent machines wherever he was from. And you know, there is a book. It's not out yet. I believe it's being written right now by a scientist who's saying essentially the same thing, that intelligent machines may emerge in our world without our realizing it, and that they wouldn't necessarily let themselves be known to us, because their first concern would be their own survival.
Of course.
And so when he said that, if I was, I would deceive you.
That's right.
I thought even at the time, my God, it looks human. What if there's nothing in there but a bunch of wires?
Well, that's right. Sure. What is your best guess about who this man was?
Well, that changes from day to day. My best guess before I read Sir Peter Horsley's memoir was that he was like an enlightened person, like a Knight Templar or something. Someone like the mysterious man who allegedly appeared during the signing of the Declaration of Independence and convinced the ones who were afraid of signing it to go ahead and do it. Or like Quetzalcoatl or someone who just, these people who appear mysteriously and seem to be possessed of great knowledge, and we just never know where they come from. Then I thought he might have been an angel. That is, was Michael and friend, Laurie Barnes, who had an encounter with someone who said his name was Michael and said he was an archangel, very bluntly, and scared her so badly, she's never forgotten it. And I thought, maybe it's true. Maybe they do come among us. I mean, I'd be the ideal person to be caught unaware by an angel, as it says in the Bible.
You know, though, Whitley, anybody who'd say, take a glass of white stuff and just drink it because they were told to, they'd also be a good candidate for the angel's competitors.
I said to him, I asked him about, we had a little discussion about that, you know, Michael and then Legion, and he was real evasive about that. He left me kind of guessing. And is this an incredibly clever thing done in a level, some kind of demonic level? I honestly don't know, Art, but I don't think so, because there's a deep goodness in his words that I just feel come shining through, frankly.
Well, there is, but there would be that sort of tomfoolery if it were the other side, too.
Yeah, but if it was the other side, it would also lead you in some more destructive direction.
Well, you did drink the white stuff, and then you didn't remember anything, so you're pretty sure you didn't sign anything, right?
Don't
put that in your head, huh?
No.
We'll make a deal here. You'll drink this, you'll sign this, and you'll have a very successful book.
Well, I don't think so.
I don't either, Whitley. I'm just playing with you.
You're playing with me, but I've played with myself about this enough. I spent 6 months refusing to work on it because I was afraid that might be what it was.
Before you wrote the book, or as you were considering writing the book, or even as you were writing it, did you think about what the public reaction to it would be like?
Not really. I was too concentrated on getting. But my main problem was this. every time I sat down to try to get the conversation down on paper, the notes weren't enough. After a little while, I would begin to feel like I was making it up, and I would stop. And it took, sometimes I would take, I took months sometimes for just a couple of few sentences of it for that reason. Because I don't want to make it up. I don't want to do that. I want this to be real.
Right, of course.
No, so,
you sound as though, at times, you're not sure. Really, you're not sure. Even though you called your wife and said, make me remember that I said this was real, that this happened. Are there still times, it kind of sounds like it, in between some of your words.
Well, sure. You know, when you have ultra-high-level strangeness experiences, which I've had a lot of experiences before this guy ever showed up in my life, they don't seem real after a while. They just absolutely don't, because there are no references in ordinary life for them. Now, he was physical enough to where there is, and the notes exist, there is no doubt in my mind that he was actually there in that room. But what bothered me were things like, what if he didn't really say much? What if it was just a short meeting and I'm making all of this up? In other words, I'm wasting everybody's time. I mean, that's the kind of question I ask myself. And
well, then you've got a hell of a mind, because some of this stuff just doesn't seem, it just doesn't seem possible that you would pluck this from the ether, you know?
She said, you couldn't write this.
Yeah.
Oh, the truth, but it is the truth. I couldn't have written a lot of this. Like, there's something he said in here about prayer that I've been first looking for as we go along. He said prayer is a lost science of communication. And he talks about, in other places, about the soul and everything being part of nature. What he's really saying is, with a higher science, we can communicate with God.
Well, you know, there's one thing I know about prayer, and I really do know this, and that is that it works.
Yes, it sure does.
But I don't know exactly what to ascribe it to, which will drive a lot of people up a tree, because they'll say, well, I certainly know, Art. You better find God fast or you're dead meat. But I don't know all of that in my own mind and my heart. All I know for sure is that it really, really does work. I've seen it, and when I've seen it happen enough times, Whitley, I can't deny it. It works. Prayer has an effect. We've got a break here at the top of the hour. When we get back, Whitley, I'd like to open the phone lines. I know a lot of people have a lot of questions. They ought to anyway about all of this. And maybe even the quad, who knows what all else. So I'd like to open the lines and let the listeners ask you some questions. How about that?
Great, I'd love it.
All right, coming up. Stay right there. Whitley Strieber is my guest. His latest book is The Key, and you've got a call to get it. It's not in bookstores, and it's a very special book, believe me. That number is 1-800-898-0284. That's 1-800-898-0284. This is Coast to Coast AM. I got to know that on the way. 255033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Well, this is pretty interesting stuff. Whitley Strieber is my guest. He has written a book, a very unusual book called The Key. This is a book you're going to want to get. Everybody I've talked to has said, hot stuff, Art, really hot stuff. You can't get it in stores. Only at 1-800-898-0284, and it's a good, reasonable price. Now, Benny from Houston says, you know, sounds like the story Satan told Eve and Whitley bit the apple. That wasn't me messing with Whitley. Anyway, welcome back. In a moment, we'll get to your calls with Whitley Strieber. Stay right there.
A
All right, to the phones here in a moment. Mark in Stony Point, New York asks on the net, is this a conversation with God type book? And no, it really isn't at all, is it, Woodley?
Well, no, it's not, in the sense that it's about a lot of new ideas. I would say in some ways it gets you closer to God.
Oh, yes, perhaps, but it's not, you know, I've read Conversations with God, and
yeah.
It's not the same thing at all. In fact, I think part of the mystery is the reader has got to decide who the conversation is with.
Is with. The book is, the book, you know, Linda Howe and I were talking about the book earlier, and I think, I guess it was yesterday, and it made her very uneasy. She was saying it's full of contradictions, and it forces you to ask questions.
Yes.
This is basically the reason that I don't think it's demonically inspired at all, because it's not trying to force you to believe anything. It is instead making you ask hard questions about yourself and the world around you, and that's what makes it different.
All right, let's take some calls, Woodley. First time caller line, you're on the air with Woodley Strieber.
Yes, my name's Edward from Yankee, California.
Hello, Edward.
Yes, good morning, Art. Good morning, Willie.
Hi.
But touching on things biblical, it's fascinating to hear the words communication and angels. And I've been just hitting on things in the Bible that if I look at them literally, and I look at this one scripture from Old Testament that says, where God is supposed to be speaking, and he says, do I not fill heaven and earth? Gee whiz, if he's literally giving us a communication in that regard, then when we pray, we're not just praying long distance, we're praying right there. In other words, we're like passing through that filling, that space that he's filling, and it's a remarkable... It might be a remarkable revelation, and I wondered, Whitley, whether you had done research in that direction as to taking things like that literally and then applying them to what you presented.
I think that one of the things that is sort of that's implied very strongly in this conversation that I had was that God is not far away. God is very close. It's an immediate presence. It's right here, right now, this second, always. And he talks a lot about the mysterious thing that Christ said about the kingdom of heaven being within us and what that actually means. In that sense, it's a journey. I believe it was a poet, Sylvia Plath, who said the awful rowing toward God, this journey, this sort of struggle, and you have a tendency to think God is far away, off somewhere in heaven, he's not in my life, and yet, as you read from the scripture, it's there too.
Yeah, but a lot of what's said in this book is very contrary to scripture.
Let's get...
For example, that the veil between the living and the dead may disappear. That's not scriptural at all.
I don't think it's contrary to scripture, though.
Well, it really is. I mean, dead is dead in terms of the separation from the living and the dead, I think. Isn't that right?
Well, but it seems to me that it's clear that in the end times, the dead are to return.
Oh, yes,
and
the very end.
I don't think we're too far from there, frankly, and
well,
I wouldn't be at all surprised.
Yeah, that'd be a way to...
Rolling in any day now.
Uh-huh. That'd be sort of a half, half mostly empty glass of white stuff, but yeah.
Well, maybe.
Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Hey, Whitley, I'd like to ask you a question. A lot of times you say publicly about... we shouldn't have secrecy, and the government should be more forthcoming. But also, I want to ask you another thing. The technique, there is a certain technique in the media, and this goes into the question of closure, secrecy and closure. You seem to always get into a lull, and then you pop up every once in a while on the radar screen. There is a thing in the media where serials, like in the old days when we had the movies, especially in the silent days, where you keep people hanging on your seats, and you would always have them coming back. And in the modern day, we have soap operas that constantly run, but there's never closure. It always appears to me that you're always giving us, you're denying the point of secrecy. You're never forthcoming. It's always, well, it's coming, it's coming. And is this a technique that you're using to sell books and to make money on the lecture circuit? Because you never come to a conclusion about anything, and yet you give us little dribbles of information, but there's never any conclusion to you. It's always constantly an endless stream. I understand that's a great marketing technique. Is this what you're about?
Well, we don't have the one-inch calculation to everything, as Dr. Kaku was talking about yesterday, so I don't know that you would expect to get total answers, particularly in areas like this.
What's your commitment? Is he using what I would like as a technique?
I think I would like to respond in my own way. First of all, I have no idea exactly what you're talking about with regard to this technique of whatever it may be. None.
I know what he's saying.
It lays.
I know what he's saying. He's saying, are you dribbling information in sort of dramatic soap opera fashion to sell books?
Did I actually have a final answer and that I'm holding back? I'm not holding anything back, believe me, mister. You get what I got. And if I can't offer you closure, if I can only offer you questions,
right,
it's what I have.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough, Woodley. That's all he was asking.
I'm not a marketer, believe me.
Okay.
Actually, caller, he's not real good at marketing. I can attest to that.
Okay. And real quick, when you talk about secrecy and the government, you know, perhaps you should be more forthcoming. Let me ask you a question. Why should we, after supposedly being lied to for years from the government, why should we want to have them tell us the truth when they've lied to us for years and years and years? Who cares what the government says? Because your experiences are real, so why would we need a government to tell us, oh, okay, Whitley.
Well, sir, as you point out, though, the government has lied to us nearly always. It's what they do. They keep secrets. And so if they actually told you the truth, how would you know it was the truth?
That's my question. So why do we go round about having losses against the government or in the other debts that they have on? Why would we care what the government give a blessing to this when we already experienced that? That's all I'm saying. Why would people put this much effort into trying to pry the truth out of the government who's lied before, and then they're going to say, oh, you guys are always right? So,
I have a very simple desire. The reason I don't like secrecy is this. Where the secrecy starts, the republic stops. When I go into the voting booth, I want to know what I'm doing. And I can't know that unless I know what's actually going on. I'll give you an example. If you look at CNN, evening news on the networks, at the New York Times, you will see a lot about the Ariel Sharon election.
Right.
And everything will be skewed towards the Palestinians or trying to still work with them. What they will not be saying is that the United States sent a battery of Patriot missiles to Israel a few days ago on ostensibly just an exercise.
Probably thinking they're going to need them with this election.
And that Iraq asked Jordan to let it move artillery into Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
There are troop movements and military alerts occurring all over the Middle East. That we don't get told. You can find it on the internet. I mean, you can find it not only on the internet, but now in legitimate news sources. It's there, but it's not in general circulation, which is where it should be.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean. And therefore, we don't get to know what's actually happening. And if it does blow up in the Middle East in the next few weeks, it'll come as a surprise to most Americans, and it shouldn't be that way.
Very good, Whitley. All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber. Hi.
Good morning, brothers.
Good morning.
Whitley, I've got a question. Have you ever had different experiences? I mean, I know the story with the gentleman, and it's fascinating, but have you ever had things speak to you? Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, listening to songs or watching movies or just going about day-to-day life where things just jump out at you, like, pay attention to me, listen to me. Has that happened to either of you guys?
You mean
before?
Sort of a song that seems to have enormous meaning?
Yeah, I mean, something that maybe you've heard of a ton of times, but
nothing. That tends not to happen to me. I am not the kind of person. I'll tell you, the strangest thing that happens in my everyday life is always has to do with electronic equipment, which has nothing to do with what you're talking about. But I drive under street lights and they go out. I get excited and the TV turns on or turns off. Or it's happened all the light bulbs and my brakes blew out the other day
Yeah, well, you can stay away from my radio studio, I can tell you that.
Yeah. Listen, I have friends who won't let me touch any of their stuff because I once walked into a friend's apartment and the TV just turned off while his mother was watching it. And They found out that the TV, the stereo, the radio in the kitchen were all blown.
Maybe you're electromagnetic death.
Well, that's all I do. That's the only thing I have that I could answer this question with. As far as synchronicities with songs and stuff, I guess I'm not on that wavelength at all. No.
Oh, I have those. All right. What's the Rockies? Hi, you're on with Whitley Strieber.
Hi, this is Gemini from Oakland.
Hi there.
Hi. By the way, that garbage can down the steps reminds me of the group Stomp. Anyway. Hi, Whitley.
Hi.
I recently read The Key, and I have a comment and then a burning question. Well, first the burning question. I was kind of disturbed by this, and then I started, like you said, it brings you to question, and that's very good. When he was talking about souls and energetic bodies and how they could be destroyed by atomic bombs, how they could be captured by unscrupulous entities and be captured forever, and I was starting to freak out, but then I started thinking, well, but the energetic body is like the astral body. Then there's supposed to be the causal body, the supercausal body, the spirit. Isn't it sort of like on a computer where you have backup systems and then backup systems for those? I can't think that the whole essence of that person, you know, all those people that were vaporized, you know, by those hydrogen bombs or that are captured by these soul catchers. That it's forever. I can't.
I don't know either. I don't know the answer to that question. It was one of the most disturbing things that he said. He said the soul is part of nature. That means to me that science can understand it and can include it in the meaning of the world in some way. I don't think that his pronouncements along these lines are necessarily literal truth. I think they're meant to be provocative, to be difficult to swallow, and above all, to make us think about who and what we are and what we are doing in the world. That's what I think is the answer to that question.
Mm-hmm.
Young lady, might I ask you your overall opinion of the book?
Well, I thought that he was kind of cagey too, like Linda Moulton Howe said. Like sometimes he was vague, sometimes he was contradictory, sometimes he laid it right on the line. He just kind of, sometimes he would answer like a politician would answer, like you ask one question and his answer didn't seem to have anything to do with the question that Whitley would ask him, but in maybe a higher way it did. And it also, here brings me to my comment that, I mean, I think it's so neat that things like that happen to you, that you know, these wise people kind of appear in the middle of the night. But I think God also appears in kind of more mainstream ways. There are self-realized teachers out there that also know people's nicknames and that luckily more of us can meet. In my case, my teacher is Amici. And I'm glad that for the rest of us, you know, we don't have to have somebody come into our room at 3 o'clock in the morning, which would really freak me out. But, yeah, it disturbed me, and yet, you know what, Whitley, it really made me feel like there was an urgency to my prayer life and to my spiritual discipline. I mean, everybody I met the next day, I looked into their eyes and I said to myself, you are God. You know, I've done that.
It's amazing.
It made me really kind of scared me straight in that spiritual practice.
The things he says about it make you, when you really look at children, you see them in a whole new way. At least I do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
You know, here's the thing. The guy was real. It's obvious, I think, from hearing your reaction to it, that this is, whatever it is, genuinely, it's a voice from another world or another level of reality. And there's not too many that you can point to and say, yeah, there's probably something substantial and something real about that voice. That's not fiction. And that is what I hope is communicated.
Well, I tried it with adult size, too. And, you know, most adults, they were just too much in their hurt. But every once in a while, I would look at an adult and think, you are God. And something in them would recognize that, and their face would just light up. So maybe there's still some child in some of us.
Well, I sure do appreciate your comments on the book, and that's typical of people that have read the book. I've had all of these people, a lot of them very close to me, say, oh, gosh, is that your book? And it really provoked a lot of thinking. So that's kind of typical of...
Yeah, it's the same here. The way people react to it in my life as well.
All right, not a lot of time. First time caller line, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
I'm glad you're back.
I'm glad I'm back.
My name is Cheryl in Bakersfield.
All right, Cheryl in Bakersfield.
Hi, Whitley.
Hi.
I was just listening to your conversation tonight, and the part about Michael really got to me. I mean, it got my attention because in Revelation 12:7, it talks about Michael and his angels, you know, battling with Satan, and Michael wins. And it just, have you ever considered that, you know, I know Michael was an archangel, just like Gabriel, but I was wondering, have you ever thought about maybe in heaven, Jesus is known as Michael up there, or in heaven?
I have no idea how to answer that question.
Yeah, I just was wondering.
All I can say, my reaction to this, Michael had better win. Because we've worked awfully hard down here for that to happen.
I suppose that's true. I'm very interested and always have been very interested in the whole concept of angels. And, of course, a lot of people think that angels are all fluttery little beings with wings and they go around doing nothing but good. But not true of all angels, necessarily, right?
Not true at all. And also, the way we would see angels, because if an angel was pure and good, the angel's very presence would make you see yourself as you really were. And that might be real hard. It might not be all that much fun to be around an angel. It might take a lot of surrender. It might be hard.
Yeah, it might be. And some of the angels might be hard on us. For example, me. Gabe is my guy. I'm kind of partial to Gabe, but many of you know that. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. This is Coast to Coast AM. Yo, Gabe.
Smile and bottle with
heard, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. Mobile card line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903.
Good morning. Welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. And actually, Whitley is not a real good marketer. This book is not available in stores. You can order it directly, and I really recommend you do so. This is one that will have you thinking for years. It's 1-800-898-0284. That number again. 1-800-898-0284. In a moment, we'll do begin another half hour with Whitley. We'll reserve the final half hour this morning for open lines. Anything you want to talk about will be fair game. All right, once again, here's Whitley Strieber and a couple of really good questions just before the phones. And it is this. George from Pennsylvania says, Whitley, well, no, wait a minute. That isn't George's question. Let me get it straight here. Do you think, Whitley, there is a connection, this is actually from Naples, Florida, and Rusty, between your encounter with this individual and your earlier very serious abduction experiences?
I don't think that any of it would have happened by itself. That it's what you're looking at is a whole life. It's just what my life has been. Maybe it's because my uncle was involved. I don't know. But if, in my opinion, what happened previously in my life led up to this, this is the only place in my experience where there is a lot of real information. I mean, I had things like before. I asked them why they came here, and we saw a glow.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. That's another answer to that fellow who called earlier. There are a lot of answers in here. As the lady pointed out, some of it appears contradictory, or perhaps it's not. That is for you to decide. But boy, this thing is chock full of answers.
It is, and the thing is it's meant to. It's really, really a subtle thing. I mean, there are people reading this now. I'm not a horn shoot at all, but I have to tell you that it's affecting a lot of important people, this book, because they can see the depth of this. This is not something some guy cooked up at all. It's contradictory. It's got a lot of answers in it. There's useful stuff in, and yet at the same time, it forces you to ask questions about yourself and about the world around you, about this man who was in here. It's an interesting thing. It's a very alive thing. I think it's a beautiful thing myself. I don't think it has anything to do with Stephen.
Darren in San Antonio asks, your guest, Whitley, said that we're stuck here on Earth, in effect. Do you believe there's some sort of conspiracy against the advancement of mankind, extraterrestrial, spiritual, earthly? What do you think?
Let's hope not, because if there is, they'll probably win, because they've got all the cards. I mean, we are incredible. This species, mankind, we forget, because we live in our lives and in our world every day. Like the guy in this, I had that conversation with him, that he says, to look into the eyes of a child to see the condition of your own soul. You look into the eyes of a child and you realize mankind is great, truly great. And we've got to do whatever we can to preserve this magnificent achievement.
But don't you wonder, Whitley, I mean, I watched the shuttle leave Earth earlier today, and I thought, neat, but low Earth orbit, we haven't been back to the moon, we haven't organized and gone further, we seem stuck.
All right, you watch the shuttle leave the Earth, and then you look at that video that's up on your website.
I know.
And it makes you want to tear your hair out.
Yeah, I know.
You know, we need to be in that UFO. Maybe in a sense that's what this is about, is how to get in there.
Maybe it is. Good point. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Art, Whitley,
hi.
Chris in Hawaii, greeting you. A big warm aloha.
Well, hi, Chris.
And, Whitley, I definitely agree with you. We should be in space. We should have been there a long time ago. Wernher von Braun had a program where he wanted to, he outlined this progressive stages of mid-70s. We have the space station we're just building now, already up. In the 80s, we would have gone back to the moon, started mining it. By the 90s, we would have been on Mars. Vietnam got in the way. Big time politics, you know, the best politicians money can buy decided it was better to have a war than to go explore. So, one thing I'd like to say about the guy who spoke earlier, though, if he would search his heart, he'd know that you're a true fellow. I've listened to you for quite a while, Whitley, and I've listened to you, Art, and I get good vibes from both of you fellows.
Good.
And the one thing I really wanted to say was flat out, we're definitely in the quickening time. Besides all the ecological time bombs and the other disasters with the global warming and everything else, I think the estimates that I've read at one point was we have about 50 years worth of oil left. Now, the oil companies have been holding back on technologies because they want to pump every last bit of oil before they, you know, switch to something else. But the problem with that is they might wait too long, and there won't be enough oil and fuel to run the machines to retool to the next technology.
That's
you know?
Pretty generous. I heard 40 years. And you know what else I heard on CNN earlier today? I heard that they're predicting in Chicago that by this next summer it'll be $3 a gallon. This will bring big changes.
Yeah, no kidding. But ginger.
Ah, yes.
You know,
oh, yes.
That's it's a provocative thing. I hope it's not a hoax. Because it really is about
real
for us. I'm thinking it's the preliminary phase in this new technology. We have these personal anti-gravity something or other, like a scooter or a small time thing that doesn't really go very high or, you know, very fast, but it gets us used to the idea. I used to watch the Jetsons when I was a kid, and I thought, oh, yeah, that's the future for me. But, you know, of course, we wait and see. It could be horses and buggies, because if the technology breaks down, that's what we'll be back to.
That's right. All right. Thank you. Whitley, what do you think, while we're on the subject, take a stab at it or gender? What's your best shot?
Well, my wife, Ann, is the news editor of our website, and she got onto it immediately as soon as it came out and went into the patent office record, searched patents, and so on and so forth. And she said this, either he has developed a way of overcoming gravity using momentum, because that's what he knows and what he understands, or it's really not a big deal. Let's hope the first is the correct answer.
Well, according to the quotes from these hotsy-totsy folks that have seen it, it is a big deal. I mean, you just can't imagine these people saying the kinds of words they'd say without it really being a big deal. And that's what keeps me hot on it, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I sure hope it's a big deal. I think I know some people who are going to find out for certain what it is sooner or later. And if they do, I'll publish it. So far, though, I haven't got anything definite. But as I say, there are people who, in the futurist community, who are inevitably going to find out the truth.
Watch, it'll be some big movie production company with a remake of the movie It.
Yeah.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, Whitley. How are you this morning?
We're fine.
Well, I hope you have the best morning ever. I'm calling. I have a few questions, and I know I don't have time for all of them, but I do. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Becky from Zionsville, Indiana.
Okay.
And I just wanted to ask, first of all, Whitley, have you ever read any Og Mandino? Og Mandino. You know, like the great salesman of the world and stuff like that.
I've never actually read him, though.
Oh, gosh. He's got, I can't remember which of his books because I've read every single one, but one of his books has a character in him, such as the gentleman you're speaking of, and he never was really sure if the guy was an angel or what he was, but he had the same effect, and he taught him day after day, and they would meet, and I'm sure there's many listeners out there that would know what name of which book it was, but I'm just not good on remembering the name of all of his zillion books, but anyway, I, like you, Whitley, have had many, many high strangeness experiences in my life. And in the last 3 years, I started getting a raise between my index finger and my middle finger after having had an X-ray for carpal tunnel, where they make you bend your hand really straight with your fingers flat out on the table. And it was after that X-ray, this raise started coming up, where it started bugging the dickens out of me, and I messed with it and messed with it until a really strange object finally did come out. We never did get it all out. Part of it is still in there. And I never did go back to see if the X-ray showed anything on it or not. But I wondered, did you see this object that you're talking about, the claw?
Yeah, it's a little claw. You know, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Whitley.
Okay, it's a little, small. It's a little curved claw. It's clearly a claw. Dr. Roger Lear has removed objects like she's described from a lot of people. And it would be interesting probably to him if she were to get in touch with him. I think his website is www.alienscalpel.com.
There's a name.
And from there, she can get in touch with him if she still has the object. He probably would be more than willing to look at it for her and compare it to the ones that he's got.
Hey, Whitley, I don't suppose you can get a picture of the claw. Can you?
I will have. Absolutely. I'll have a picture of it. I can't. I don't have one now, no. But in a few days, there will be a full study of it up on my website.
Can't wait. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber and Art Bell. Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome back, Art. We've been praying for you and your family. And
well, obviously prayers work.
Yeah, they do. Whitley, I wanted to ask you a couple questions. First of all, have you ever read any of the books of Kyle Griffith? Because what you're saying your visitor told you sound remarkably like the writings of Kyle Griffith. I'll give you a couple points where he wrote a book, a supposedly channeled book called War in Heaven. One of the things, and it's sort of a kind of, I don't even know what to call it, but it's basically supposedly the truth about the other world. And one thing he says is souls are natural. They're actually physical objects, but in a higher dimension. They're kind of like they're almost the same as our physical bodies, but they're the extension of those into a higher dimension. Also, he says there are evil entities that capture souls and actually eat the souls. And that relates to the thing I've often heard Art talk about, that when you die, don't go towards the light. The light's a trick. The light is what the evil entities put out,
okay,
kind of as bait to
wait,
to attract the loose souls.
Yes, right. Wait, don't say that Art said that. That's inaccurate. Art did not say that. Somebody that John Lear is acquainted with said that, and John Lear passed it on, and it's driven me batsoid ever since I heard it. Don't go to the light, go to the darkness. It's a trick. But don't ever say Art said that, because Art didn't. I guess there are some similarities, though, Whitley.
Yeah, I guess. I didn't think there was anything in the key about souls being eaten, but
there was a thing about nuclear war and what happened to souls, wasn't there?
Yeah, well, there is a definite implication that souls can be in jeopardy.
Yeah,
but of course, I mean, the Bible's been telling us that for quite a while. It's not new in that sense.
That's true.
It's just that he sort of demythologizes it and brings it into a kind of a natural thing.
Okay. First time caller line, you have reached the air with Whitley Strieber and Art Bell.
Well, this is an utter pleasure. Art, I sure am glad to get to talk to you.
You're on a cell phone calling from where?
I'm on a cell phone, and right now I'm driving through downtown Dallas.
All right, excellent.
Anyway, Whitley, I wanted to mention something to you. You said that a lot of the stuff, I think it was one caller that said this, said a lot of the stuff was said sort of like, I don't know, offhand, or you couldn't understand it, or some you could understand and some you couldn't. And then, Art, you made reference to the fact that some of the stuff is probably or may not be scripturally correct. One thing that was taught in the New Testament is Jesus said, and he spoke in a lot of parables, and he also said that parables were not meant for the carnal mind to understand. It was meant for the spiritual mind to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like until you get your, it's basically like this, until you get your mind right with God, you're not going to understand the stuff. I mean, and then another thing too is, y'all mentioned that could it be from, you know, the bad side of the coin. And one thing that's always said throughout theology is that there's an ongoing battle until the very end. There's an ongoing battle between good and evil. And like in any battle, evil is always going to camouflage itself to make itself look good so that it can influence the other side.
It's absolutely something you've got to consider.
Yeah, I think so. I would agree with the...
I mean, I noticed when you were talking about the fact of whether or not, you know, Whitley signed something, you know, they kind of got Whitley spooked. And I wasn't making any reference to that, but I mean, it's something to think about in the effect that, you know, in any battle, the enemy is going to camouflage himself to make himself look like someone good. So therefore, you take it in, you know, like, who knows what a ghost is? If a ghost comes to you as a passed on relative, you know, and then tells you all kinds of stuff, do you take that as from God, or do you take it as from the evil side dressing itself up to look like good? I mean,
well, if it's a relative that we like, most of us probably think of it as good.
Exactly.
Are the associations we make.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's like this right here. The devil's not going to come to you looking like this big, huge, horned creature and tells you he's a nice guy. You know,
he's probably going to look more like Christina Applegate.
The devil is definitely going to look as pretty as he possibly can.
Well, thank you very much. Again, not being a great... Listen, this is, what, 1995? Is that how much it is?
Yeah, it's $19.95 plus $4 shipping and handling.
Okay. And is it a 24-hour order number?
Or? Yeah. Well, it is tonight. It's on tonight, and normally it's on during business hours, but tonight it's on all night.
So operators are standing by.
They are standing by.
Probably sitting, actually.
Right.
All right, the number is 1-800-898-0284. Why should somebody read this? What is the biggest reason you could articulate right now why somebody should read this?
The reason anyone should read this, no matter what their what direction they're coming at it from, is it has a lot of new things in it. I think it's obvious from the degree of newness that's involved that it comes from someone who is a genuine mystery, and to look into that mystery reading this, it's worthwhile. And incidentally, they can also get it on my website, which my new website address is unknowncountry.com, and they can easily get it there as well.
All right, what's coming up Sunday on Dreamland?
Sunday on Dreamland, two things. Russell Targ, one of the...
Oh, he's great.
Oh, fabulous. One of the founders, one of the originators of remote viewing. And then later we're going to have a guy who made a recording of a voice that is so strange. It's been extensively analyzed. This is no hoax. He doesn't know whether it was a Bigfoot or what it was, but we're going to listen to that. He's going to tell us all he knows about it, and it's an incredible story, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
All right, listen, thanks for being here, brother.
Brother, it's been great.
And we will do it again soon, of course.
Of course.
Whitley, good night.
Keep well.
Take care, my friend. That's Whitley Strieber, a friend.
My love, what a tale my thoughts could tell. just like an old-time movie out of those from the wishing well. In a castle dark or a fortress strong, with chains upon my feet, you know that ghost is me. And I will never be set free as long as I'm a ghost.
This is one of those songs that I was talking about. The one after the news will be two, and we'll do Open Line. Open Line coming up next.
What a deal you thought you could tell. Just like a paperback novel, the time you just stood still. When you reach the park.